a dog, a prissy English banker, a Nazi stormtrooper, a midget from Amarillo, a cross-dressing member of Japan's parliament, and Groucho Marx all go into a bar. So begins the joke that was once rated world's funniest. It was so funny that in 1970, Paramount Pictures decided to make a movie based solely on the joke. A studio location was secured, sets were designed and built, a producer, animal wrangler, cameraman, costume designer, caterer, stuntman, six actors, and a funambulist were hired. Props were acquired, briefly misplaced, then found again. And a composer was hired, no matter that the caterer pointed out that his theme for the opening credits had been pilfered from a 1969 Alka-Seltzer commercial starring George Raft. On the first day of shooting before an energized cast and crew that numbered nearly 40...
Wait, you're not going to tell me any more about George Raft?
Do I need to?
You must tell people to go see that.
Oh, yes, you can Google the advert. It's an Alka-Seltzer commercial. Just tap in 1969 George Raft Alka-Seltzer and you'll find it. And you'll hear the music.
Ah, yes, excellent.
On the first day of... That's a joke.
On the first day of shooting,
before an energized cast and crew...
cast, in this case.
That numbered nearly 40... The director, who could barely suppress his own excitement, yelled,
"Action!"
Regrettably,
"Cut!"
followed a minute later, because no one could recall the joke's punchline. Not the scriptwriter, not the art director, not the gaffer, not the actor who played Groucho Marx, not even Joke World Las Vegas, purveyor of the world's funniest designation. And yet... everyone somehow remembered it as being a real knee slapper.
If I slap my knee, I will fall over on the table.
It happens.
I'll slap.
Paramount had
no choice
but to shut down film production until the punchline was located. The director started to lambaste the scriptwriter for the textual lapse, but the latter adroitly shifted blame to the stormtrooper, an irascible character who even the director had no desire to further provoke.
I thought he was a character actor.
Irascible character actor.
Who even
the director had no desire to
I had
further
heard this
provoke.
Story before, yes.
So the producer hired a private detective who had once dated his sister named Lou. That is, the Seamus was named Lou. The sister was named incongruously Bro. Lou interviewed more than 100 people affiliated with the jest industry.
The jest industry.
The
jest industry. Not the just industry.
No justness here.
All right, I'm understanding.
All but four had heard the joke at some time in their lives, and still no one could remember the ending, though one woman was convinced it had something to do with a statue of an ancient Greek medical procedure called the Colostomy of Rhodes.
I'll just turn some music up after that. Some colostomy music.
In place of punchlines, Lou uncovered numerous conspiracy theories. One was that the joke had been overheard by aliens from the planet Zombocartumia, who found it offensive, especially the punchline that made fun of their supreme garment administrator. So they pulled the punchline out of the memories of everyone on Earth using trans-dimensional hypno-worms. And while there was nary a shred of proof to support this hypothesis, the theorists were quick to point out that neither was there any evidence to repudiate it. Another conspiracy theory, particularly popular with Moldavians, involved the clarinet. A handheld weapon that was first used to great effect during the War of the Carpathians. After the Just pausing briefly. Are things copacetic? After the war, which lasted the better part of a day, though better is probably a misnomer here, the bayonet was dropped from the bell of the clarinet, and it gradually evolved into a musical apparatus. That is, the clarinet evolved. The bayonet didn't evolve, unless your idea of evolution is migrating to and being assimilated by a northeastern New Jersey city with a suspiciously similar name.
Ah, I thought you were going for the bayonet and the clarinet becoming the bayonet's clarinet, but the bass net's clarinet.
You're thinking of bass 10 clarinet.
Oh. All right. Going back to the baseball theory.
Or maybe the basset horn clarinet. The bassinet.
Ooh, the bassinet. We've been through the bassinet.
Hmm.
And what key is that in?
Lou.
F. G. Something like that. All right.
Lou reminds me that bayonet brings to mind another joke that he heard while doing his research. However, in the view of Joke World Las Vegas, it is to the world's funniest joke what a split infinitive is to multiple personality disorder. And is not worth repeating here. Sorry, Lou. However, he also uncovered 5 fascinating clarinet facts, which are relevant to the story in an abstract sort of way.
That's the only way we do it. Number 1.
The clarinet is the national instrument of Bali, where it is used as an agricultural tool to till croplands and disperse seed or fertilizer.
Number 2.
It is one of only 2 instruments that sound better when played underwater.
Numéro 3.
What?
Sorry.
How many?
3.
Trois. Just as one determines...
You hear French and you think deux immediately.
Yes, exactly.
But this is trois.
Just as one determines a tree's age by counting its rings, a clarinet's age can be ascertained by counting the number of its keypads.
Number 4.
An ignominious ancestor of the clarinet was the clarinoyance.
I thought that was French. Clarinoyance.
Clarinoyance. Maybe so.
Clarinoyance. It makes more sense that way, you know.
Because it was a disturbingly shrill instrument employed during the French Revolution to torment political prisoners. Ow! No more!
It's not loud enough. There it comes. Number 5.
What?
Number 5.
Oh, okay.
Numéro 5.
Ah, oui. Asked to describe the instrument he helped to popularize, Benny Goodman once cryptically said,
"The clarinet is bigger than a bread box, but smaller than the bread inside."
He never elaborated. We were discussing conspiracy theories.
You were. I was listening.
Yeah, let's see. Yes, Moldavians and the clarinet.
Yeah.
I can't seem to put my finger on that information right now. That's odd, for it was here just a moment ago. Interestingly, Lou tells me that my response parallels the explanations from nearly all of his interviewees. They knew the joke's punchline a moment ago, but they couldn't recall it just then. In any case, to this day...
Yes, which both, is what?
It's this day.
August 14th.
Is it?
2009.
Both joke and movie remain unfinished. So if anyone on the flip side of this radiophonic broadcast does know the punchline, please phone
323-956-5000. That's 323-956-5000.
Soonest.
And you know where that goes.
I do.
I do too. I did my research.
Reward. Though maybe not from them. Alternatively, you can try to forget about it for the next 2 hours or so by keeping your radio, isopod, smart fax, or interactive telex machine tuned to this frequency, which has its own conspiratorial past. The frequency, which typically originates
in the house,
is today coming to you from an abbey.
An abbey.
And in place of an abbess, or an abscess, it features a clarineticist whose name anagrammatizes into Old Bed Turn.
Conspiracy?
You be the judge. We'll be
in the house.
What's the name of that?
That's called The Long Night.
The Long Night. Our guest today here on Calvus and Damien
in the house
is Philip Brunel. Oh, wait. No. Todd Brunel.
Philip Brunel was like, he was a famous engineer, right?
Well, no, he's also the music director for Garrison Keillor's, used to be.
Is he still, I don't know, he lives in the same spelling, one N, one L?
I think so, but I don't know.
Yes, then he's maybe a relative.
And
then in the music business, nonetheless, I should contact him.
Yeah, absolutely. Immediately.
You hear that the influences of Bally in that tune.
There were some, well, at didgeridoo sounds, sort of. I mean, you can hear Balinese didgeridoo.
Yes.
You hear the tilling of the soil with the instrument.
Absolutely.
Todd Brunel, welcome to Calvus and Damien.
Thank you.
And our vast audience is here.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Robert, you rule.
Great. Yes.
There we go. And this is our first live video experience.
Really?
The first of our new In the House, Out of the House series.
I didn't shave this morning.
And so, So we'll see what happens next.
I didn't shave either.
Audience members are required to shave.
Kick him out! No, he's our only audience member.
So, tell us about yourself.
Well, put me on the spot.
Yeah. Well, you're a composer and a performer, which is a sort of a reinstitution of a great tradition, which sort of evaporated for sort of a few months.
Millennia
in the middle of the end of the 20th century, and now it's right. Back with us. So, how did you get into this situation, being composer, performer, improviser, and humorist?
Well, I'm mainly an improviser. I'll just admit that straight off the bat. I just call myself a composer so I could be on your show. I do notate music as well, but I use the improvisational textures as my main influence. And because of recording technology today, there's a whole lot that we can do with it. My first experience doing electroacoustic adventures was with Skip Bruner, and that's why I mentioned him.
Not Skip Brunel.
Skip Brunel. Skip Bruner.
And you studied with Herbert Brun.
No, Skip Brun.
I have no Brun connection.
You skipped him.
I skipped all the Bruns.
Exactly.
Until now.
Broom?
No, brooms.
Okay.
I have this website called clarinetconspiracy.com. Clarinetconspiracy.com.
That's clarinetconspiracy.com.
With a C.
And don't forget, call right now, 323-956-5000, and demand that joke. Mm-hmm. You'll be connected to the main operator at Paramount.
I think when you're concluding things on that was about the conspiracy. So come to clarinetconspiracy.com and find out all about the clarinet conspiracy. Is it used as a tilling instrument?
We do our
or not?
Research, you know.
You
know where you the conspiracies
have. I mean,
are.
That's really
so,
good, you know?
Yes, and you were like, saying.
I don't know. I mean, how do you... I'm a performer. I do a lot of concerts. I've had a busy summer. I mean, the other day...
It shows by coming here.
I was doing a... Well, you know, this is an opportunity for me to just get out of where I live.
Which is?
In East Boston. And it's actually really nice in East Boston. We're right on the water, and I have a little boy named Luca and my wife Maruna, and my mother-in-law is also living with us, Adina, and she's great. She's really helping us out with our little toddler. Adina.
You mean
not Adima.
Not like absolutely fabulous. Adina.
Adina. Well, she's absolutely fabulous, too.
Oh, well, there you have it. All right.
So, the recording we were just listening to was my dear friend Robert Rivera, the cellist, and we have a duo called the Rivera-Brunel Method, and we're also in another project with a poet named Reggie Gibson. Reggie Gibson, another dear friend called Neon Juju. And that project, the duo project, he and I have worked together for about 20 years, just working together in different projects, improvising together, coming up with different things that we like to use for as pieces. And
why does he get top billing?
Well, you know, I think because he wanted to make sure that he did.
Okay.
But he should, because he's a great musician and a great player, you know, and a very creative guy and a composer of his own right. And, I work in several different groups. The project that's on your thing right there is called the Circadian Rhythm Kings, and we're on the Innova label.
Innova.
It's for digital download, which is sort of a drag because the whole album is like where it's at. There's like Well, the tune that, like, the first track on that is the thing is, when you go to, like, a thing like iTunes, you only hear, like, a couple seconds of the clip, so they don't really get, like, the full, you know.
So do you have a sort of an opinion about the change from album-based sales to what they call song-based sales?
Well, I hate shopping. And when my wife goes shopping, I can't stand it. I have nowhere to go. The only place I would have liked to go is like a record store, a CD store. You know, and at least in Harvard Square and places like that, and here, obviously, in, where are we? This is Brattleboro.
Just outside beautiful Montpelier, Vermont.
Montpelier, Vermont. It is beautiful here, by the way. And there's a record store, but it was closed because I was trying to find a recording of the quartet for the End of Time because, by gum, since I forgot my music and I wanted to play it here today.
You can lip sync.
So I was going to try and transcribe it, you know. But I just didn't. I forgot my music, so whatever. I'm just going to be creative.
Well, you're going to do some improvisation, so you could work that in.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we know how that starts. You know how it goes a little bit.
I know, but
it would be kind of nice.
The thing is, everybody
leave
uses
it in
mess.
There.
It's so incredible. I mean, you know, that work is just so powerful as it is. I mean, with all the dynamic contrast and everything like that, you know.
And, you know, you don't mess with Messiaen.
Don't mess with Messiaen.
No.
You know,
no,
so,
he will get you with retrograde rhythms and you'll be
would,
sunk.
Who would probably want to, you know, have my throat.
Or your clarinet, one or the other.
You're right.
I lost
my bayonet, by the way.
Your bassinet.
So I don't have the bayonet on the end of my clarinet anymore.
Well, we'll get to see that in not too long a time. But one thing you did skip is actually how you started.
Long ago.
How did you get into music as a composer and a player? And did this start in school?
Well,
did it start at home?
I mean, I started improvising when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I'd have these jam sessions with my
with
dad.
With what? Clarinet? Did you start on that?
Yeah. Well, we would start on recorder. And then it seemed like... The thing is, I was really in love. You mentioned Benny Goodman. Okay, it's fine. Go rip on Benny Goodman. Fine. But, I mean, let's face it. This guy was like, you know, if you had glasses... Like Benny Goodman, both you guys are wearing glasses. You were cool back in the day. I mean, he had such an influence on the people and the culture of the time. I mean, and a crossover. I sort of see myself as a crossover classical and jazz clarinetist performer. You know.
So you just played and you said you were playing with your dad and
when I was a kid get sidetracked right
yeah and
so he plays piano
okay
he's an excellent pianist and his name's Dean Brunel. Hi Dad, if you're listening, and he may be listening actually, you know, and maybe even watching too. That's probably just your screensaver, right?
Probably is. But
so anyway, we'd have these jam sessions, and I was really obsessed with the music of Benny Goodman and the music of the swing era, and I would just listen for hours and put my record player on and just jam along with, like, the greats when I was a kid and just really jam. I didn't know that a clarinet played in a symphony orchestra until I was a teenager. And
many of the players in symphony orchestra don't realize that.
Well, you know, there's obviously a great symphonic tradition of clarinet playing that I don't want to rip on because, you know, I'm friends with a lot of these guys and gals, and they're great players. It's just that there's also there's an outside of the orchestra place for the clarinet, too.
Another dimension.
So, yeah. There you go.
We could sing that out.
Another dimension.
Okay.
I thought you were going to do like that Beastie Boys thing. You know. Oh, I shouldn't say that. Now you're going to have to pay royalties.
No royalties. No.
We invent our...
So, and then what happened with the arrival of the bass clarinet?
Oh, the arrival of the bass clarinet. Well, I was at the Boston Conservatory and I first started that. Playing that there.
They let you in as a clarinetist?
They did. They managed to let me in as a clarinetist.
They've raised their standards since then.
They have raised their... Indeed, they have. They've become a better school than they were back then. But, hey, back in the day, they let me in, and I got some really good training. And I was working with a great teacher named Attilio Poto, and I worked with him through the 4 years of the Boston Conservatory and a couple years before that. And then after that with Mr. Cardillo, Pasquale Cardillo. So they were really, the thing is, I was learning this incredible sort of orchestral classical training, but I always had that improvisational creative thing happening. And then actual notation started happening like after that. You know?
After
that.
Really?
I mean, I never really, I mean, I've always been an improviser since I was a kid. And then the notation started probably when, when I was in my early 20s or something, you know, and I didn't actually start writing pieces until I was in my late 20s, you know, and early 30s.
That's something like, and here you had the quartet for the End of Time music, and then you left it somewhere, and you have called on to play something, so you just improvise.
I'm going
to
just, yeah, I do a lot of that. And actually,
forgetting,
one of the things
forgetting
that,
your music.
Forgetting my music. Now you guys are going to make me look bad.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I
was waiting for this moment.
Bringing music with me here that I forgot, which, you know, usually doesn't happen to me, you know. It's happened to me a couple. But anyway, what I was planning on doing today was just getting really creative and sharing some of my recordings with you guys, so, you know. There you go.
Okay.
Well, let's.
Is that okay?
Yes, it's okay.
Happy
to. Do you want to pick up the instrument now?
Sure, I'll pick
up
the instrument. Which one?
That one. The recorder. Did you bring your recorder?
The recorder. No, I didn't.
Hmm.
I didn't bring the recorder.
Hmm.
But I do have a Bulgarian double flute on me, I think.
Yeah, that's not a recorder, though.
No, it's not a recorder, but, you know, hey, recorders for recorder players.
All right, well, our guest is Todd Burnell, and he's going to do some work for us now, and we're going to sit back and listen.
And watch, will you turn the camera?
I'm just about to get started.
And watch when we, while I turn the camera. Guest is Todd Burnell, heading back for the microphone.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
I've
hold on a second.
What?
I'll go like this, and you can pan over and I'll walk. All right, I'm kind of a ham.
Well done. Yes, the influence of. Was it McGuffey or one of those guys?
Actually, McGruff.
McGruff.
McGruff, the dog.
Fred McGruff.
Fred McGruff.
Fred.
Fred McGruff.
Okay.
You know, who stamps out...
he did.
He stamps out crime wherever he goes, you know. McGruff.
The My Three Sons theme song.
Oh.
But that was saxophone.
That's going to be probably the shortest piece that you're going to hear.
Is good.
Fred McMurray is good.
No, I don't. The thing I just did. I don't know. Whatever you want to call that.
Well, it has to have a name.
Okay. It's called Salient Energy.
Ah, wow.
He's good.
Good. That was good. That was fast.
Salient energy.
Okay.
Man of good words. So when you're improvising, what are your sources? I mean, is this just sort of basic experience, or does it transform depending on what person you're working with?
Oh, yeah, and I have a lot of examples of that because I have this wonderful series called the Vortex Series. The Circadian Rhythm Kings, which you have there, that was... this is what I want to talk about, improvisation. Maybe we could sort of...
Let's
get serious here now, okay?
Oh, wow.
Because we've talked about composition versus improvisation, and then with recording technology, we have this wonderful way of taking recordings and then sort of doing what we want to do with them. We can create electroacoustic compositions and so forth. Now, what I have on me are different examples of different styles of improvisations with different people. Now, I think I changed my style. I probably do, but certainly the personnel has changed. And the wonderful thing about my Vortex series is that I try and work with different people at different times. The introductory material that we heard, Robert and I did some stuff at the Vortex series and also at this church where we did a few. There's a nice scene in Somerville, the Nave Gallery. It's a beautiful space, actually. And so we have a very much an approach that we've spent about 20 years working on and off. And then there's other people that I've worked in that I've introduced to come in through my series, and it's the style, it changes every time. Like I have two recordings with two separate electronic effects guys, and their style is so different. And then there's an oboist, there's another cellist, and different sounds happening. The Circadian Rhythm Kings, which we have queued up there, it's three horns and a rhythm section. So it's kind of a sort of a jazz-influenced collective improvisation, and everybody in the group also writes, too. There's John Funkhauser.
John Funkhauser!
So anyway, he's a composer, and he teaches over at Berkeley, and he's a great bassist and pianist, very well-known and respected around town. A Gary Fieldman, an incredible percussionist, drummer, composer, does classical music. He's an incredible jazz musician. I mean, he's been on a lot of recordings, and he has a band called Field Effect. Then there's Field. Talk about Field. There's Ken Field, who you're going, ah. See, Ken.
Finally, I recognize a name.
Ken goes everywhere. Ken is everywhere. He permeates all things everywhere, and Ken's great. And we're also playing another group with called Musinar, which is an Armenian jazz influence project. And in fact, that's a separate thing. But R. Sarkeesian is somebody that I want to definitely talk about because he's great and a dear friend and incredible composer and pianist. But Ken is in that band, the Circadian Rhythm Kings, and then the incredible Andrew Hickman, the tenor sax player. I'd compare his playing with Dave Liebman or Wayne Shorter. I mean, he's amazing, you know, and the lines that he plays and the improvisations what we do collective is we listen to one another. We have groove-based things. We have, you know, definite free-sounding stuff. And the first track on that album right there is actually, it starts from a very small sort of cell, a very sort of spatial idea, soft, and then it builds so that by the end of it, there's several different places it goes to. And I can't even tell you from a compositional perspective, it doesn't have like this, it doesn't really continue the same thematic material throughout. It's through-composed. And by the end, you're at this, like, or near the end, you're at this really climactic, almost gospel-sounding funk, like, incredible thing that evolves from this small cell. And then it winds into sort of an unwinding with the three horns sort of weaving in and out in this sort of ethereal texture with a rhythm section winding down, and then it just fades out.
So is this part composed? Is this structured improvisation? How does this work?
This is not even... Come on in. We need more audience. Just, please. You're on the internet live right now. Anyway. Too bad she didn't stick around. I think we can use some female energy in the room right now. Oh, I hope my wife didn't hear me say that.
No,
I'm just kidding. I love you, honey. My dear wife, Maruna. I love you, baby. Anyway, so what was I going to say? Oh, you're going to do some romantic music in the background.
We are the crooners of Calvos and Demian.
Ooh, that song. Ooh.
Maruna. Maruna.
Yes, so, hello. Let's listen to these rhythm boys.
Yes,
yeah, the Gated Rhythm King. So, like, the thing is, it's all completely, thoroughly, and totally improvised. Everything is improvised. So check it out.
All right.
That's all I can say.
And so we're starting right from the beginning?
Right from the beginning. Uh-huh. Track number one. It's called Kind of Circadian. And actually, that version you will not hear on our album if you download it on Innova.
Here we go.
On iTunes.
What's the personnel again? You,
Ken Field,
yeah.
Andrew Hickman, Gary Fieldman, John Funkhauser, and me.
Todd Brunel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're back. Our guest is Todd Brunell.
Oh, what? Oh, no. That goes away for the moment.
All right. So you were actually telling us while we were listening to it some of the things that you had to do to make this happen, make it sound good,
make it sound good.
Exciting, and, of course, the fact that you can't always get all of this when people want to download it.
Well, yeah, when the thing, I was grateful to Innova to pick it up and to give us some, to recognize the band and the project. The thing is, when you have a digital distribution deal, is that you can only download it, and then so I'm not sure exactly what 10-second clip of that piece is up there, but if you could have possibly have imagined how it started and how it sort of wound up, I mean, that rhythm section, I mean, Gary and John, it just gives me goose pimples when I hear them, you know. And we're lucky. I mean, three horns, we go in and out. We create harmonies. That's pretty much what you would have heard live. What I did, there was one section where there was an explosion and a microphone, where there was a very incredible editing job done by Warren Ammerman at Rotary Records, who also mastered this recording. And this is the with more reverb added to it. This mix, like I said, is not the final mix that you hear that's up on iTunes right now, or the record which I would be burning from my computer and sending out if people are interested. But there was very little editing. It was just mainly mastering and cleaning up as much as possible. There was a lot of extraneous noise. It was a student-run radio station that we did that live.
Oh, we don't like those.
We did that
no,
live.
Not anymore.
Hey, I love student-run radio stations. I mean, I think the greatest music that you hear is student, student-run radio stations, and their fire, is amazing. I mean, they're great, right? I think that just shut down. I'm not sure.
Did it? Isn't that interesting?
Preparing to... are we offline, though?
Oh, we may be. We are still recording the show, so continue.
Yes.
Okay. What just
happened
here?
Oh, gosh. Do you want me to do some playing?
Hey, yeah, that would be just fine.
All right,
fine.
Why don't I do some playing?
Okay.
Let's get some live music vibes.
It's about time. What was the name of the cut again that we heard from the ensemble?
It's called Kind of Circadian.
Mr. Todd Brunell, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
name. We must have a name.
Engineered Twilight.
Oh, Engineered Twilight by Todd Brunel here on Calvus and Damien in the house.
In the house.
We're experiencing some slight technical difficulty. However, that isn't casting any pallor over the quality of the musicianship.
Not at all.
Well,
this is the new out of the house, on the road, in the house, we don't know what we're doing series. And it seems that the computer thought it was on batteries, and so it's now in the process of hibernating. So until it comes back up again.
Yes.
We are here in radio mode only.
Excellent.
With no one else
is,
able to hear us.
I would also like to say the obvious. How could anything throw a pall over this beautiful day in Vermont?
That's true. That's true. And our enthusiastic audience.
Would AA batteries help?
I think a big pile of agar and a couple of electrodes.
And a bottle of Everclear.
Yes, an OxyClean, did you say?
OxyCotton?
Oh, maybe that too.
I might have some of that in my trunk.
So this was not the bass clarinet, if I'm not mistaken.
No, that was the regular clarinet. Yeah, the regular clarinet. Yeah, and I was playing with the bayonet actually shoved inside the instrument. That
yes,
time,
it worked so. For it as a nice art sharpened the pitch.
Yes, it sounded like all of Bayonne was coming out the other end. So some more of your recorded material.
Okay.
Because you know the amazing thing of going back and forth is that not only we hear your individual voice as a performer and improviser, but your collective one, and now we get to hear yet a third voice.
Plus, we don't have to think as much.
Right. We don't have to think as much either.
Have you
to say something?
Yes,
oh, what? Oh, I thought that you were. Oh, gosh.
You're
oh, okay. This is a piece.
See, this is a segue. See, third voice meant composer, improviser, and then improviser in ensemble, and now composer of notated music.
Notated. Composer
we,
notated
we remind
music.
You because you told us that.
Right.
And we have good memories.
This was a piece that I premiered over at BU, and it's composed for double bass, and clarinet, flute, and soprano. And it's taken from a Romanian poet. I tried calling my wife to find out the name of the Romanian poet. I actually don't have a whole lot of information on this piece, and I haven't looked at the score for a long time, but I did find the recording. It's a pretty dark poem. The piece is called In the Shadows.
Is this a student piece or this later or
this was a student piece actually. I composed it a couple of years ago when I was taking some classes over at BU. Yeah.
And so
that's Bayonne
University. Bayonet University.
Yeah, Bayonet University. That's right. Sharpen a bayonet.
And the name of it again is?
Yeah. In the Shadows.
That is
the funny sounding clarinet.
That's the wrong cut.
Track
so
one.
Let's
track
move
one.
That to track one. All right. Let's see here. 8, 9, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's try this again. Back to the shadows? Again?
Into the shadows.
Yeah.